I'm Nahla Ayed, host of Ideas. In this age of clickbait and online shouting, Ideas is a meeting ground for people who want to deepen their understanding of the world. Join me as we crack open a concept to see how it plays out over place and time and how it matters today. From the rise of authoritarianism to the history of cult movies, no idea is off limits. Ideas is on the CBC Listen app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Talia Schlanger sitting in for Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So synesthesia is a condition that is different for everybody who has it, but essentially your senses get blended or you experience things together, like seeing a color when you hear a sound. Some people get a taste or a strong emotional sensation. The musician and actor Rudy Mancuso has lived with synesthesia for a long time, and part of what it means for him is that he perceives music, or at least musical patterns, where other people would not. Rudy was maybe first known for his presence on Vine. Remember Vine, those 7-second videos? Then he went on to become a really admired YouTube creator where he made things like the Awkward Puppets series.
Customer service.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I'm calling
customer
because...
Customer service.
Yeah. Hi. I'm calling
Sir, because... Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes, I can hear you.
But, wait, sorry. What?
Was that you?
I was saying that I can hear you.
Sorry, just go ahead.
Rudy is also a musician, and he's opened up for Justin Bieber. He's jammed with Justin Bieber. He just seems to be able to create songs out of thin air, and you'll know what I'm talking about if you've ever seen him online. Why do I feel like I'm stuck in another world? Why do I feel like I'm... Justin Bieber singing. Rudy Mancuso composing alongside him. But now Rudy has directed, composed, co-written, and starred in his very first feature film. It's called Musica, and it brings all of his experience together, having synesthesia, trying to balance that with his relationships with his mom and potential love interests, and trying to figure out how to make his fixation with sound into a career. I've never seen anything quite like this movie. It's kind of a musical, but it's not a musical. It's a rom-com, but it's not a rom-com. It's hard to describe. And so when I talked to Rudy Mancuso, I wanted to know how he described the film when he first pitched the idea.
Luckily I've been living with the idea and these concepts for a very long time. So I had plenty of time to think, develop, and polish. I brought the idea to Amazon almost over 4 years ago now, and actually almost nearly 5 years. And I pitched it as pretty much what you saw, an autobiographical tale about a guy who sees the world through this synesthetic perspective. And I described synesthesia and my symptoms and my experience. And I also explained how much I craved more Brazilian culture and the Brazilian American experience depicted on mainstream screen, TV, film. And I brought my keyboard, I brought my puppet to the pitch. I showed them a short film, which was this makeshift version of the opening diner scene. So it was a package that was clearly developed for a long time and clearly extremely personal.
So for people who are hearing of synesthesia for the first time, I know that it's individual to different people who experience it. But for you, can you describe what it's like to walk through the world with synesthesia?
Yeah, so I've been able to educate myself and identify with a few different types of synesthesia, misophonia synesthesia, linguistic personification. The main one is rhythmic association. I have a very musical mind, and I also am very sensitive to certain sounds and words and languages. So the melding of the two kind of turned into this type of specific synesthesia whereby everyday regular sounds, for as long as I can remember, my brain attempts to organize them musically into some kind of musical construct, which sounds kind of cool and different and romantic, but it can also be quite torturous and distracting and unnerving, especially as a young person who's trying to find their place. So I found that to be an incredibly interesting perspective that deserved to be a character in some kind of story.
How did you navigate that when you were a kid? It sounds hard.
Well, I knew it was different and I didn't quite know what to do with it, but I was lucky enough that I had supportive parents and I used it as an asset to create. I walked over to piano and could everything I heard, I could emulate. I would buy these puppets and create little stories out of them. I was obsessed with filming things as an aspiring filmmaker. And so the synesthetic qualities lended themselves to the birth of a creator trying to find their own voice. Other synesthetes are not as lucky.
Absolutely. Yeah, having a place to channel it. The way that you represent synesthesia visually in the film, it's really a feat because it does give you a window into somebody else's headspace. Like that's what I was saying.
Thank you. It's really nice.
Yeah, for sure. And by the end of it, it's like, oh, I'm in a different space now that I'm back in my own mind and the way I experience the world. It's very immersive. And I'm wondering, like, there's incredible scenes like in the fish market where ordinary sounds of fish being tossed back and forth or the pots and pans that are hanging turn into like a choreographed performance and a musical number. Is it that elaborate in your experience of the world, or is this sort of a heightened version?
It's certainly exaggerated, hyperbolized for the performative element and for it to feel cinematic as it feels. It's not always that high, you know, of course it's not that highly choreographed and the music isn't that much in the foreground. It was more so trying to depict for the audience what it could be, what this condition could be if considered a gift, as Isabella helps Rudy perceive it as, rather than a hindrance. So yes, highly hyperbolized, but it's meant to represent the best version of the condition. And there are other moments in the film, as you see, that represent the darkest version of the condition.
Yeah, Isabella is one of the love interests in the film, and what's so beautiful about her relationship with you is that, like, she accepts the premise that you're describing to her of how you experience the world without she just takes it for what it is, and it's beautiful and I think comforting. Was there somebody for you in your life that did that early on that just said, "Oh, great, let's keep moving"?
Yeah, no, not necessarily. I think Isabella represents more than an actual person, a path mm-hmm. That was presented to me in my early years, a route that Rudy could take, and a perception of the world that he could abide by. Whereas Haley, for instance, represents an entirely different approach, and none of them are wrong. They're just different. And that's why I like to call it a love square, because there's also Rudy's mother, who's played by my actual mother, represents an entirely different approach. But ultimately, Rudy has to make his own way and find his own approach and self-realize rather than be taken under the wing of any external force in his life. And it's the hardest thing that he has to do. More than anything, it's coming of age. But he almost comes of age a little too late.
What do you mean by that?
Well, and also this is a point I wanted to make in the film. I don't think coming of age should be exclusive to being young. Rudy is in his late 20s, still trying to figure out who the hell he is. And I feel like when I was in my 20s, a lot of my peers had a path that they were already following. They were going to study this thing, or they wanted to take over that job, or they wanted to pursue that career. And I truly didn't know. I knew I loved being creative, but I didn't have a plan. I was failing all my classes. I didn't have a steady job. I didn't know where I wanted to live or where I wanted to go. And I was a massive people pleaser, and it got me into a lot of trouble. So some of my favorite people are in their 50s and 60s and still self-realizing. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I think there's an interesting thing there with people with people pleasing almost needing to be shut off in order to make art. You can't really do those two things at the same time, I don't think.
Well, perhaps some people can. I certainly couldn't. I needed to choose me before choosing anyone else, and it took me a while in order to get there.
Yeah, how did you find your way into filmmaking? Like, what made you get started in it?
Well, Another thing that's very reflective of the dynamics in between the characters in the film. I was commuting to school, like you saw in the film, living at home with mom and taking the bus or train, NJ Transit, on a weekly basis. And I would skip classes a lot so that I could just go and film things. First, it was a camcorder, a mini DV, and then eventually it was a DSLR. And I would go from business to business in the Ironbound in Newark, restaurants, cafes, and ask them if I could shoot a commercial for their place. And my mom was brokering those deals and relationships. Instead of saying, no, you can't skip classes, she was actually encouraging me to go door to door and offer to shoot commercials. So it was because of my mother's support. And eventually I started shooting videos on Vine and social media. My mom was a part of those as well, that I was able to find my voice and realize actually my passion can be my career. It's possible.
That's so amazing. Your mom, she... Was it hard to convince her to be in the movie? She's like, she's so good in it.
Haley want to take care of you. The rich girls don't cook, don't clean, you know.
Oh, maybe I can do those things for myself. What do you think?
Isso foi romance faculdade. Você está para se formar. Termina com ela.
Well, actually, she just ended things with me.
Bitch.
Ma, come on.
Don't you worry. I'm going to introduce someone perfect for you. Can I introduce someone perfect?
I already told you, Mom. I'm not ready.
She's so good. Was it hard?
It wasn't hard. She I think deep down she knows how natural of a performer she is. The whole thing is a bit unusual, the process, to her, because you know, you have three cameras and 100 people. We're shooting in her actual home, so it's a tall order. But we figured out how to make it work. She's so unapologetically herself on and off screen. So I'm very lucky I had the opportunity to bring that to the screen. But yeah, I think I stopped being her director for a lot of the scenes, and I was just her son. We'd have conversations, we'd improvise a ton and have just a real time conversation. I'd navigate it so that we can hit certain points. And we had three cameras rolling, covering it all. So a lot of what you see is as authentic as it can get.
Que bom, então vou preparar um cafezinho para você.
Oh, please, I worked till 3 a.m. last night.
Nossa, brincando de boneco outra vez?
They're puppets, Mom.
That's what I said.
Your performance is incredibly believable and authentic and so, I don't know, it's just so good. How do you do that and then also step behind the camera and direct?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the beauty is that I was playing myself. So had I been in another character and had to adopt an entirely different persona, perhaps would have been trickier, but I was Rudy, who would step off set and still be Rudy. So I didn't treat it as different jobs. The directing, acting, co-writing the script, and composing the music were all so heavily interwoven that it felt like one big job rather than separate mindsets. I got to snap into director mode or snap into actor mode. They're kind of converged.
I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power here on Q. You're going to hear more of my conversation with Rudy Mancuso coming up.
Hi, I'm Jessie Cruikshank.
Jessie Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl, let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout. Because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power here on Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Rudy Mancuso. We're talking about his first feature film. It's called Musica. He co-wrote, directed, starred in the film, composed all the music. And it's more than a rom-com because at the center of the film is Rudy's depiction of his real-life experiences with synesthesia. In his case, that means he hears everyday sounds and his brain turns those sounds into music. I wanted to ask him how he went about depicting that in the film.
Hey,
The level of detail in some of these scenes is amazing. Like, I'm thinking about, there's like one dancer that sits next to you on New Jersey Transit that's got red hair that's like doing some incredible movements in the scene that stuck with me so long afterwards. And I wanted to know, I was thinking of directors like Spike Jonze and like Michael Gondry, who like go to an incredible level of detail with what they're representing on screen. Are there references like that for you that you were thinking of in making this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first two films that I was introduced to, one from my father who's Italian, the other by my mother, is Brazilian, was a Brazilian film called Central do Brasil, Central Station, which had a very grounded, naturalistic look, feel, and approach. And then there was Life is Beautiful, La Vida Bella, Roberto Benigni, that my father introduced to me, that was a little bit more stylized. And from a musical standpoint and a directorial standpoint, I was very inspired by those two films. And then since then, you know, for this film, we referenced Amélie a lot, Amélie Poulain, in the juxtaposition between grounded performances, but hyper-realistic and fantastical color and set pieces. I'm a big Chaplin fan. He's an example of a one human band. And we don't, you know, when everyone told me, I don't know if it's possible to compose, write, direct, and act in your own movie, I kept pointing to Chaplin. I was like, I think it is.
Wait, sorry to interrupt you, but when you say pointing to Chaplin, for people who are listening, you're literally pointing to a tattoo of Charlie Chaplin that's on your arm.
Charlie Chaplin's on my arm. And it's I tattooed it as a reminder that a one human band is possible. He went even a step further. He would choreograph, physically cut the celluloid film, and edit his film. So there's a wide range of inspirations and references. I think in order to be, my opinion, a great filmmaker does have incredible attention to detail, but also knows how to let go and let things happen in a very natural, organic, authentic way. And are also really revealing personal storytellers. I knew I was the only person who could tell the story because it's my story. Hmm.
You also brought along a buddy from your YouTube days, Diego the puppet. And I'm wondering, people might remember him from like the awkward, funny interviews that you've done with people like Justin Bieber and with Mike Tyson.
What's it like to be Justin Bieber?
It can be hard sometimes.
Like for me, it's terrible.
In what way? What do you mean?
Like my wife is crazy.
Yeah?
She checks my phone, like every day.
Were there things from making those videos that you brought with you into making Musica?
Oh, yeah, very much. The first video I ever did with Diego on Vine 8 years ago was the Starbucks song, and that Starbucks song is in the movie.
The name of the first song is Starbucks. Okay. It's expensive. Thank you.
There's at least a dozen pieces in the film, moments, scenes, sequences that were auditioned on social media over the course of the past 10 years.
Yeah. He plays such a fun part in the movie. It's very fun to see him in there. I wanted to ask a little bit more about your relationship to music in general, because in some ways watching the film, like it seems like a great love of your life or the great love of your life. And then also it's popping in at moments that you don't want it to be there, and it's distracting you or taking you away from something that you might want to be able to be present in the moment. And I think that's a complicated relationship. Huh? Like music is almost a villain in the movie in some parts.
That's right. And that's kind of a perspective that I'd never really seen, this constant battle with music. Like I'm in a very long-term, sometimes toxic relationship with music, but I live and breathe it. It's the first language I've ever spoken. But yeah, it's sometimes a chore to think musically. Sometimes a chore to listen to music. There people ask me, you know, what's your? This has actually been a part of. I've been asked this question a lot. What's your favorite song to listen to when you wake up, when you're in the shower, when you're driving? And I value silence more than anything, because there's already so much musically going on in my head that listening to produced music can be an extra challenge. I love it so much that it's hard work to to listen to. So I can't relate to people who just listen to music in the background passively. Like for me, it's always in the foreground. I can't just be working while listening to music, right? No, it's like if I'm listening to music, that's all I'm doing.
How do you find silence? Are there things that you have to do to find silence in your own mind?
Yeah, actual silence by definition, you know, for me is doesn't quite work. I actually oddly some kind of ambience for me, I equate to silence more than silence itself. So like city streets, for instance, the ambience of the city or a restaurant or the waves of an ocean, some kind of foundational ambience to me feels more like silence than utter silence. Because the second there's utter silence, like an indoor location that is soundproofed, then my brain starts doing all the work and the silence ceases to exist.
It's a really, I think you're going to give people a great gift by talking about all of this, because I think that getting inside a it's very rare to get inside of a creator's mind like you've made it possible to do in this film. I kind of wanted to close by asking about the, like you described, a love square, I guess, between your mom and then these two different love interests in the film, one who really accepts you and what you hear in your head as you are, and the other one who's asking you to be more maybe neurotypical or less of a wild creative. Going through the journey of co-writing and directing and starring in this film and composing this film, where are you at in that love square with yourself as a person?
Well, it might have taken me a little bit longer than I would have liked, but I finally found my own way. I stopped trying to please others, and I was more honest with everyone in my life, and most importantly, more honest with myself. And I said, this is what I love. This is what I want to do. Let me double down. You know, Isabella's character encourages Rudy to take it higher. And in actuality, I learned that for myself, and I did take my ideas higher, and I worked harder, and I wasn't making a single dollar, but I was choosing me and choosing creative and choosing storytelling. And I got very lucky that it resonated with people, and I built an audience, and then I continued to do that. And then ever since then, it's all been a strategy to arrive here where I can tell a bigger story in a bigger way, in a longer form. And I've been following that ever since, that creed. To trust my instinct more and stop considering my differences as diseases.
And does that allow you to have freedom in your relationships too?
Way more. I mean, it's hard to be confident in a relationship when you're not confident in yourself and you're not self-realized. So now I can say that part of my life is so much easier to navigate, and it makes so much more sense because I have such an innate understanding of who I am.
Well, thank you so much for making the time to talk, Rudy, and congratulations. I think this film is so brilliant, and I'm glad you made it.
No, thank you for watching and for all the kind words. This is why I do this.
I think I'm really, really good. But the truth is that I'm not that cool. I tend to act a particular way. When I'm around you, when I'm around you, when I'm around you. Sometimes I Photoshop my pictures. I get really picky with my hair. Sometimes I see people talking about me, but I don't really care. But the truth is that I really do. I bought some shoes that make me taller.
That's Rudy Mancuso with I Think I'm Cool. Before that, you heard my conversation with Rudy, a musician, actor, writer, and director. His new film, Musica, is on Amazon Prime now. That's it for this episode of Q, but you can find another one in your feed right now. It's my conversation with Dawn Landis, a singer-songwriter and musician who's done this really interesting project based on a book that she plucked
off of her shelf after it sat there for many, many years. The book is called The Liberated Women's Songbook, and it's a collection of these songs that trace the history of women's activism all the way back to the 1830s. Songs written by suffragettes and labor organizers and housewives. And Dawn tells you why she wanted to record those songs so much right now. You can find that in your podcast feed. I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power. I'll see you next time.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.